think that one of the biggest and most important pieces that anyone can do when starting to use ChatGPT is take what you already do and things you're passionate about and look to infuse that into what you're looking for. Let be that first wave of information that hits you so that you can dive a little bit deeper into that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of World Strides Podcast, Changing Lives Through Education Abroad, a weekly series of conversations with international education's most interesting thought leaders, as well as discussions on emerging trends, best practices, and innovation happening in our field. I'm your host, Zach McInnes, and we have a live one for this week, folks. Today, we're taking on the intersection of artificial intelligence and education abroad. AI has been by far the most requested topic area for the pod so far in 2024, and I am excited to be able to bring a lively conversation to our listeners today. AI has ushered in an era of disruption that experts say could rival the changes brought about by the Industrial Revolution, and has led to a significant shift in public discourse about technology's potential benefits and risks. AI's impact will be profound for higher education, potentially transforming teaching methodologies, student learning experiences, and administrative processes, thereby redefining the traditional model of university education. What about the impact on our work in education abroad specifically? We'll dive deep into that very topic today. Joseph Maringolo is the Assistant Director of Study Abroad at Salve Regina University in beautiful Newport, Rhode Island. I know Joe to be an incredibly thoughtful and innovative guy who is not afraid to be at the forefront of trends in education abroad. Instead of fearing the unknown when it comes to artificial intelligence, Joe has worked to embrace it. We'll talk in depth today about the risks and rewards of incorporating AI into our work, and how, when properly leveraged, AI can help practitioners to go further, faster in their work, and to improve outcomes for our students and program participants. I am excited for today's discussions. You do not want to miss this episode, and stay tuned for what is sure to be a dazzling conversation. Joe Maringolo, thank you for being here, and welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much, and to all of the WorldStride team for having me here. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
To get us started, could you please give us an overview of your professional journey and how you came to be the Assistant Director of Study Abroad at Salve Regina University?
Absolutely. So that's a bit of a long journey, so I'll try to give you a bit of a snapshot with some highlights along the way. So I will say that getting into the field of study abroad, everybody has their own unique journey. For me, it goes all the way back to high school. I had an experience with my family. We all went to Italy together during a winter break. And that, for me, made the culture, the food, everything come alive. We visited different museums, explored different cities. And I thought to myself, I have to do this when I am an undergrad. So I attended St. Mary's College of Maryland for undergrad. I was a student athlete. I played Division III of lacrosse. I wasn't heavily recruited or anything like that. I mention that because it plays a very integral part in terms of my journey in getting into study abroad. Originally, I thought I was going to focus on just lacrosse. I get cut from my team after my freshman year. A new coach comes in and there's a bit of a change in philosophy. And so I'm thinking I might transfer. I'm considering it. I'm not sure. But then I think to myself, well, study abroad allows me to stay enrolled at the institution, but try something new and different that's been on my mind. I go and do a semester of study abroad in Italy, fall of my junior year, fall in love with it. It definitely kept me on campus, made me really meet new people, and forced me out of my comfort zone. And then I decided to go back and do a short-term program to England, just a Shakespeare program that is still running to this day. It's actually running its last iteration this summer. It's over 15 years. Big shout out to Dr. Vineyard Black at St. Mary's College of Maryland. That was very transformative for me as an English literature major, being able to see the theater come alive. But I wanted more from even just those study abroad experiences. And during my time in Italy, I took a trip to Spain, visited for a weekend, and thought to myself, I need to find a way to come back out here and teach English. 1 year turned into 4 years and a master's in teaching learning Spanish. And then I moved to Peru for a bit. Big shout out to Peter McGovern for facilitating that. And then I tried teaching Spanish in Baltimore City for a bit, really liked the in-class experience. But I thought to myself, what was transformative and life-changing for me? It was the study abroad experience. So I thought to myself, I need to get into this. So I had worked at three different providers. So I started with Travel for Teens on a seasonal contract. And then I end up finding Global Experiences with international internships, working at admissions. Big shout out to M. Merson for bringing me on here and for Steve Riley as well for their support, but the entire team at Global Experiences now as a part of AIFS. And then I had worked for a few years with Peter McGovern at Odyssey Custom Programs Abroad. So I got into Salve Regina because I really wanted to dive into higher education and looking at what that is for me, because that was what transformed my life and really got me thinking about what I wanted to do bigger picture with my goals. My uncle worked in higher education for more than 30 years in advancement. So seeing his work and helping develop and create study abroad programs really has been a big part of my life. He's been a very integral part of my life. So here I am working and leading students and guiding them through semester study abroad programs, working on marketing, social media, a bunch of different things at a small institution of over 2,000 students. Wear a lot of different hats here.
I want to go ahead and get into the topic of today. And so for our listeners who may be less familiar with artificial intelligence, let's start with some definitions. IBM's definition is that, quote, AI leverages computers and machines and mimics human problem-solving and decision-making capabilities. And ChatGPT defines itself by stating, quote, it is designed to understand and generate human-like text. It belongs to a family of models that use a transformer architecture, which is a type of neural network architecture that excels at handling sequential data. Wow. Joe, could you break that down for us, please, into simple terms?
So, out of transparency, I would consider myself an AI enthusiast, but I would not want to put myself in a position where I am identifying myself as an AI expert or someone that knows the nitty-gritty in terms of the background. However, given my educator background, I like doing research, finding really solid and sound information, understanding information, and then trying to make that content relatable to others. So I've read a lot of information that has deep and sophisticated answers about what AI is and how it all works. So I want to give everybody a really good visual that I think will help us make this a bit more palatable, because during my presentation at the Forum on Education Abroad, talking about ChatGPT, we had a little over 60% of the attendees, or 90 people or so, and a little bit over that, that came in. So there's a lot of people that are just starting to dabble and look at it. So I want to start kind of simple and think bigger picture and visual. Zach, we talked about the internet and where we say, well, it's like an ocean. There's all this information floating around. Well, let's think about that and start to dive in and drill into then what is in the ocean in terms of these big pieces. When we think about the icebergs, we always think about the cultural iceberg. Let's start with something that, and like culture shock, let's use that example. So if we think about the bottom of the iceberg, there's a data set. So the information is floating around in the ocean, and then there's this information that gets pooled and pulled in and kind of stuck together into this data set that gets transformed and worked on by trainers and people that help curate information from across the internet. And then just at the base surface level of the water. So we go from having this data set that's deep down underneath the water, the base and foundation of the iceberg. We go up a little bit and we start to get to the surface. We're starting to look at large language models where this information gets situated into intelligible language. You know, information from sites like Wikipedia and information that is publicly pulled from across the internet. And when we think about ChatGPT, let's look at the top of the iceberg. Essentially, ChatGPT is this artificial machine that's pulling in all this language and curating and making a snowman. And if we are able to give it the language, the information, in order to customize the snowman in terms of what we give it based on the information that it has, you know, that's in the data set, that's as a part of the language model, it's pulling in and synthesizing and curating this information for us. I can't take full credit for this explanation. There is a man by the name of Leon Furze, who's an Australian educator and scholar with over 15 years of experience, who really starts with the kind of breaking this down. I really like that in December 2022, which is just a month after ChatGPT launches, he's already seeing what we saw later on in 2023 when this started to become more and more out into the public. So there's many other leaders in this conversation, but as an educator myself and as someone who's looking to other people for information that makes sense to me, that was one that really stood out to me. We could go into a lot of other examples. There are other types of iceberg examples and concepts, breaking ChatGPT down into different areas, but we'll stick with what we've just gone through for now to let people chew on that.
And I know you just touched upon this, but I do want to lift up that you presented at the 2024 Forum on Education Abroad Conference, a session entitled Study Abroad and ChatGTP, Meaningful Background for Transformative Practices. I just love this title. I understand this was a session that was not only timely, but very well received. How did you become interested in this topic? And was there anything that surprised you in researching and preparing for the session?
Absolutely, Zach. So let's start with my interest in the topic. So one of my really good friends from high school, shout out to Vince Lonnie from the Washington, D.C. metro area. He's in tech sales and he's always been involved in just finding new technology. He's always been that friend that finds the new shiny thing on the internet or that funny thing that's taking over. And so he shares this with me and we're sitting down and just plugging in different prompts. He said, well, what's something that you use in study abroad? So I'm just asking it a bunch of different questions and then asking to translate it into Spanish. And as a Spanish language enthusiast, I am blown away how it is. It's not just looking like Google Translate, throwing some words together. It is properly organized. So that really got me interested in it. And I thought back to myself, well, this reminds me a lot of Smarter Child from the AIM days. For my millennials out there and perhaps other people that use the American Online Instant Messenger. It was a chatbot that had quick, snappy, fun, personalized answers, but nothing too in-depth. So I looked at this and I'm like, wow, this is like Smarter Child that got supercharged. And then at the World Stride Summit, summer 2023, so Amy Hoover did a great presentation on leveraging AI for global education. This comparison between Google and ChatGPT. And I was so excited to see someone really talking about the impact that this could have on our field. Some groups got to use Google, some groups got to use ChatGPT. And I could just tell at that time, she's one of the first people that really I thought was bringing this out to the forefront, but in a comparative model. And I thought to myself, there might be some people in this room here that maybe haven't taken a deep dive into this. So that kind of inspired me to then put together my proposal of literally a few days after that to just think about, well, how can I help train and coach people up on being able to use this? Because it is just taking over. At the end of 2022, it's the second fastest growing platform in the history of the internet. The only first one that beats it out is Threads. But keep in mind, Threads, which is like Twitter/X for those of you, I would assume many people have heard of it, but it was LinkedIn with Instagram. So it had a vehicle and a way to reach so many people right away. But ChatGPT just connected with people just out of the blue off of the internet and just really took off. So I think that was just something that really caught my eye and really just got me inspired to do it. And I think the thing that surprised me as I was going through and looking at what I was planning to do is just, yeah, that explosion really caught me off guard and seeing how much we go from just a few hundred thousands of users to literally over a billion users in just a few months. It just takes over. So that's definitely something that caught my eye.
You and I share that in common. You know, it was at the World Stride Summit last summer in Chicago where Amy Hoover's presentation really sparked my enthusiasm in AI and ChatGPT as well. So shout out to Amy Hoover. And you did something I love with your session, though. You reserved plenty of time for the audience to ask questions. What were your takeaways from your interaction with attendees at the session?
So my biggest takeaway, I think, especially with artificial intelligence and ChatGPT in particular, is, well, when we're talking about these, we have to be very targeted. Originally, my presentation was going to go really wide and far in terms of the entire landscape of artificial intelligence and breaking down different terms and background and then history and all of that. And I thought to myself, I need to just dive in to what this actually looks like. Pull up the hood, look what's underneath it, and showcase and be able to share for people that may have never even been into the platform before what that looks like. And that was one of the reasons why I did a couple of 5-minute how-to videos, because I thought to myself, if somebody leaves this presentation and doesn't get a good sense and feel for what this actually looks like from within the platform and some key features, I haven't done my job. And so that was really important to me. And so my biggest takeaway from that was going deep and not wider. Because if you try to go really wide, people are going to want to go deep, and that's going to be challenging, which is one of the reasons why I did the pre-recorded videos, so I could keep an eye on the chat and make sure to go back and forth and give people feedback. As a solo presenter, I really needed to make sure I gave myself a little bit of a break too.
As you know, Joe, so many education abroad offices out there are leanly staffed. How can artificial intelligence help us to be more strategic at work so that our time is best utilized?
So the ways that I use it, I think of it in three big buckets. There's a lot of how-to videos and different types of curated content around how ChatGPT can be used. And these are not the only three ways, but this is what makes sense to me. So first off, virtual assistant. So I do want to make sure very clearly when you're putting information into ChatGPT, that information gets thrown into a system and can get stored all across the internet. Be very mindful about the type of information that you are putting in. Any information from syllabi, for example, student name, specific data, be extra clear and talk to your institution about how you use it, when you use it, and the parameters around that. I think we might get into that a little bit later, but virtual assistant, that's one of my favorite ways. Is I'm trying to think about, I need to write out some emails here. Can you help me write 3 emails to help promote our XYZ event on campus, our study abroad day, our International Education Week event, whenever we have kind of coming up? Or just different types of follow-up emails to clean things up. An organizer. I also manage our student worker team, and it's helped me create different types of shells for the types of like Excels that I make. It can take information that is written in paragraph form and then put it into like neat little quaint tables. So it can also help us reorganize information. I need a daily schedule that's from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. with an hour break in the middle for lunch blacked out, and it will give in 15-minute increments. It can do all of that. Little time savers. There's other ways you can do that in Excel, but I just like being able to throw something in really quick and help me organize things. Brainstormer. How do I organize an event focused on scholarships for study abroad? Or taking information you may already exist and say, can you help us add in something that might be fun, like trivia, or helping at least organize the different time frames and periods within an event that you already have existing, and just kind of using it to bounce other ideas off the walls and see what comes back.
As you know, my friend, anything new can be a little scary or intimidating. How would you suggest that our colleagues in education abroad think about artificial intelligence or ChatGPT as a way to transform elements of their work in a positive way?
So I think like using anything, I'm a language guy. So even just in order to get more familiar and get more confident in what you're doing, I think that one of the biggest and most important pieces that anyone can do when starting to use ChatGPT is take what you already do and things you're passionate about and look to infuse that into what you're looking for. So for example, cooking, ask it for some recipes. If you're looking to cook a new dish or try something new, you can even just say, I don't know what to cook. Here's what I have. And it'll give you some ideas about what to cook with those ingredients. sports. If you're big into basketball and you're like wondering those random crazy questions, you can plug that in. I mentioned that specifically because sometimes ChatGPT has what are called hallucinations. It's pulling up information from all sorts of areas and all different corners around the internet. Some of that information may not actually be 100% factual. So make sure any kind of information that you're getting off the internet, just double check and triple check that. Same thing with like trivia. If you want to have trivia with some friends, have it pull in some questions. Make sure you fact check it, but do that. That's a fun one. And then personal travel. If you're looking for like a day trip, hey, I'm in Newport, Rhode Island. What are some fun day trips or some parks or some places that I can go and explore? I have 24 or 48 hours. You can obviously do that going to other countries and other places. Again, quick little last trip. It might not tell you if there is a holiday or if there's special schedules. So, but let it be that first wave of information that hits you so then you can dive a little bit deeper into that.
You know, I actually think this is fantastic advice on how a practitioner in our field can start using AI or ChatGPT. It's to play around with it in your personal life, right? This is sort of how I got into it. You know, I was recently on vacation with my husband. We went to Iceland for our 5-year anniversary. Yay, go us. But I fed into ChatGPT that he and I like gastronomy, hiking, and history. And I asked it to plan us a week-long itinerary in 2 different cities, right? And it gave me a pretty great place to start. To your point, it doesn't know like if hours changed at a restaurant or if there's a local holiday. You do have to edit and spot check ChatGPT. It's not perfect, but it is a wonderful place to start. I also want to echo what you said about recipes. Sometimes if I'm at home and want to cook something and I don't have a full fridge, I'll just tell ChatGPT what I have available at home and ask for it to come for the recipe. And it does a pretty darn good job at that too. So I love it, Joe. You know, AI can be a fabulous tool and time saver, but I know there's some resistance to it. I often think of this in relation to how some folks used to think about the internet as something scary back in the 1990s. And now we can't imagine our lives without it. How have you seen thought processes change when it comes to AI in your colleagues over the past couple of years?
So I think when you say the word change, I think one of the biggest things when we think of change, we think about adaptability and shifting. And I think everybody, especially last summer, was like, whoa, now that we really know the capability of this and that it's out in the world and out at the forefront, I think at one point at the end of last school year, so for us in the Northern Hemisphere here, that's like June, the user numbers are crescendoing. I think we're at like 1.5 billion across the world. So a significant, very significant number of the world population is using it. So you think about, okay, well, now that we have the summertime, we have to figure out how we're going to adapt our policies around this. And so I was speaking with Patrick Campbell, the director of the Center for Teaching and Learning here at Salve. And I think what he had a great presentation that he gave for faculty here at Salve right before the school year kicked off here. The way that he presented the information essentially was saying, hey, here's some ways that you as faculty can look at how to use ChatGPT or not. But here's my recommendations, because a lot of it comes down to the syllabi, the specific syllabus that a professor is using for their class. And his recommendations were, and I really believe these, so one, never use it. Don't use it. Put that in your syllabus. If you don't want your students using it, make it uber duper super clear that it's not to be used. And then there's another philosophy, which is use it, but cite it the same way you would any kind of regular source. And there are ways that students can cite with the prompts that they use when they put into ChatGPT. And then the third way is sometimes you have to put in the parameters of maybe on certain written assessments or when the professor says it's okay on certain types of projects. It is the idea for us was, well, let's leave it in the syllabus for the specific areas. And I think my biggest takeaway from that was, I think as we change, we have to really see and understand, well, in certain classes, it might not be appropriate or certain content areas, but let's leave it up to the faculty to really guide the students, but make sure that the faculty have some resources and some information and some people that they can lean into to get some more perspective, especially if they maybe are just diving into it themselves. So this is really the first full school year. So we're going to see what happens, I think, over this upcoming summer in the continuation of the adaptations as it relates to ChatGPT in and around the classroom.
I've heard some rumblings about some institutions overseas reducing their writing requirements around concerns about ChatGPT, which is interesting for coursework. And as you know, my friend, experience levels with AI are far-ranging in our field. Let's talk about how folks could have some quick wins if they are just starting out using these tools. What are some ways AI can support international education practitioners in their daily work?
So a little plug for my presentation that I did with ChatGPT and transformative practices. So reworking templates, and I say templates as in emails, itineraries, events. Something I used it for was I have a pre-departure orientation. I'm focusing on health and safety, academics abroad, a few other things, and give me a schedule that works within a 3-hour time frame. And then ironically, I said, give me a 30-minute break in the middle, and then it spit out 3.5-hour long presentation time. So it didn't take in that I wanted the presentation time to be 3 hours with the break embedded. But anyways, I think that just kind of goes to show that there are some limitations, but there's also, where does that ultimately come from? That's me, the user, and I need to make sure that I'm being extremely specific about what I'm sharing. So that's obviously with an event, but emails as well. We're promoting our study abroad fair. Please, here's the providers that are going to be here, host institutions. Here's the raffle that we're going to have. Give us 3 emails that help us promote and tell people to save the date, a follow-up reminder, and then a day of email. And it helps curate. And it's not the end-all be-all, but it helps at least lighten the load and maybe add in a little bit of creativity. It'll even throw in some fun emojis for you so you're not having to copy and paste some emojis. I love that too. Sometimes I'll just say, hey, ChatGPT, throw in some emojis and make this fun for me. Or come up with a good email title for me because I struggle with email titles. And along those same lines, building better special events and adding in fun little things that you can do that used to maybe take more time, such as if you wanted to host a little study abroad around the world trivia, asking it for some questions to be able to build into that. And then even just saying, well, we want to have the trivia event. What are some fun, cool prizes that we could have that are, you know, not low budget, but cost effective and something that we can be able to provide our students? And then that's when you can take all that information too and then say, now start creating the emails. So it all can kind of dovetail and come together.
You know, you touched on a really good point. And I think one of my favorite pieces of advice when it comes to using ChatGPT effectively is the better the input that you give it, the better the output's going to be. And so I would just advise our listeners, there's a lot of tools on the internet. If you just Google how to use ChatGPT, there's a bunch of, you know, infographics you can find about the type of language that you can feed into ChatGPT for successful outputs. And just like the more you play around with it, the better you become. Crystal ball time, Joe. In general, or specifically within international education, how do you think the use of AI will evolve in the next year? Or how about the next 5 years?
Big picture, expect the unexpected, my friend. And I mean that sincerely because ChatGPT really starts to take the world by storm at the very end of 2022. And then it's exploding with over 1 billion users. And so we just, even in that time frame, we're seeing an explosion and shifts across our field. So I think in the next year or so, the biggest thing I think at the forefront of my mind is the Artificial Intelligence Act that was passed in Europe in mid-March. So I think looking at how the law is going to interpret this and then how all of us are going to have to plan and react and act to this, because our students right now here in the United States may or may not use it. Hunches, there's a lot of people using it. Chances are they're probably using it too. So I think finding, as people in our field, practitioners, advisors, et cetera, we're going to have to figure out what and how we're going to adjust our language and knowledge. It could very much be maybe a part of the pre-departure scale, really in depth. But I think right now, it's just got to be at the forefront of our minds. I'm just thinking back to, it was around 2018 when GDPR rolled out. And there had been a lot of talk and conversation about data security and how everyone was going to have to adapt. The conversation had been kind of going and rolling for a bit. And then all of a sudden, a lot of organizations across our field were like, well, we need to come up with ways to make sure that we're GDPR compliant. So I don't know if we're going to have that much of a massive shift, but I think we have to really be prepared for that in the next year or so. And then in the next 5 years, I think about just voice and virtual reality kind of going head to head with each other in the ways that, like, right now we have ChatGPT that has and serves certain functions that are very helpful. I'm feeling sick, ChatGPT, and I want to cook something that's good and healthy that'll make me feel better. What are your thoughts? And it kind of comes back and gives you a bunch of different options, right? If you ask Alexa the same question, it's going to, if you need specific food or certain things, it might give you more targeted and specific information, but it's not going to be as robust. You can ask ChatGPT, hey, I'm feeling kind of sad right now. What's a good song from this kind of genre? And they'll give you a few different options. Now you could ask Alexa to play a playlist for you, but it's not going to give you the same robust back and forth that I think ChatGPT has. So I'm curious to kind of see how that's going to continue and evolve as a lot of these platforms that may not seem like they're going head to head, but they're starting to really, I think they're starting to bounce back off of each other. Virtual reality goggles too, in the short term and in the longer term, will be something also fascinating that I look at and say, well, right now there's some that are worth thousands of dollars and some that are worth just hundreds of dollars. Will those be like what we have with smart TVs now, where they were used to be really, really expensive, and now the baseline price of those has gone down, and then the applications are now able to be integrated into the TVs across our platform? So I'm kind of curious to see how that goes. My last point on this, though, that I find really kind of, I'm curious to see what happens here, is we've seen the Snapchat filters and the different filters that can change and warp our faces, and we could sometimes look like, almost like there's that James Cameron movie, Avatar, where it really does some crazy wild shape-shifting. And I'm curious to see what happens in the future as that technology gets really good in terms of impersonations, both with voice and then the actual physical features, and to see what that looks like. Do we have influencers in the future that are people that have their own personality that are just, you know, we grew up with like the Smurfs and the Muppets and some of these, they're like just characters, right? Well, are we going to see people that look more lifelike, that were, it makes it more challenging for us to discern, oh, is this a real person or is this actual virtual reality that's cooked up? It'll be fascinating to see all of this play out in the next 5 years or so.
I can't wait to see it unfold myself either. I do have one wish for the creators of ChatGPT, should they be listening, is to figure out how to do my expense report using artificial intelligence. And Joe, a huge topic within higher education is the intersection of artificial intelligence and academic integrity. AI is powerful, and generative tools can cause gray areas in how and when they are utilized in classroom settings. As someone who's very tapped into this topic, what would you highlight for our listeners that's perhaps most relevant to study abroad here?
So I think the two things, maybe three things I want to touch on here, study abroad scholarships that are very focused and heavy on writing, pre-departure and how AI is used in the classroom abroad, and then short-term programming and how AI is used in that. I'll try to touch on those pretty quickly here, but lots of scholarships, like I said, involve a lot of writing. And I think now, that, like I said before, you know, there's the brainstormer, the organizer, and there's the virtual assistant. I'm just curious to see what happens as all of us start brainstorming more about looking at scholarships, because I think we want our writers to speak in their own voice, and how do we do that authentically? I don't have a foolproof answer here. And I think there's a lot of conversation that's happening right now about, well, how do we get students to feel so inspired that they don't feel like they have to just lean on an AI to create their essay? Pre-departure, how we're using it, thinking about how we are diving in and expanding upon, well, what do our partners in the countries where our students are going, thinking about what their classroom needs are going to look like and what their faculty and what their staff is saying about it. So then we can start to echo a lot of these sentiments so students aren't taken aback or surprised if they're not able to use ChatGPT the same way that they've been using it on the campus, or how they're even presented with the information in the first place may be vastly different. So I think just all of us needing to be in conversation about that. And then I think in short-term programming, I think that that's really important because, for example, when I did my short-term program in England, it was very writing-centric and very writing-focused. We went and saw a lot of plays that were focused on Shakespeare, having to do a lot of the reading and then writing about our feelings and our thoughts. And I think to myself, I learned so much more about those plays by really tapping in and feeling connected to it. On the same side, though, Zach, I feel like some students may say, well, you know what? That was a great thing, but I'll just plug my prompts and stuff into ChatGPT because I want more free time. That's what ChatGPT is giving all of us, is maybe not more quote unquote free time, but it's giving us time for other things. And for students, it might just be more leisure or more time to explore their area. So we have to, I think, make sure we're combining and looking at all of this holistically, because I think that ultimately, I mean, this goes back to just cheating and using the internet back when our teachers, at least when I was in high school, you're only cheating yourself. And I really don't want that for students, because I think that as they go through and do their own research and find out more about their programs for the scholarship essays, or if they're doing assignments while they're abroad, I think they're just shortchanging themselves if they lean too heavily on AI.
And on a similar note, one aspect that you have presented on was being thoughtful about information that we input into ChatGPT in regards to privacy. Do you have any quick takeaways for our listeners to keep in mind as they leverage these tools in their own work?
Absolutely. So these are all my personal thoughts and feelings, by the way, not representative of Salve Regina University. And this is just something that I think is really important as we're looking at the information that we put into it, is that if it's information that is going to be public and outward facing anyways, then please just think about that and have some fun with putting something. If it's going onto a website anyways, or if you're planning on putting it on social media, then in theory, that information shouldn't be or won't be something that should be uber duber, like that needs to be secure. But if you're taking information from something like a syllabus, or you're taking information from a contract or something that is more IP related, intellectual property, then I would be very hesitant to put that in, especially if it has student names or specific types of information that you wouldn't want to just put onto the internet in general. I think that's a general good rule of thumb. If you wouldn't put it out onto the internet and post it on a blog for someone else to find, don't put it into ChatGPT. That would be my biggest kind of role there.
AI can be scary good and also hilariously bad, Joe. Do you have a funny anecdote you'd like to share with us today?
Yeah, so I'll shy away from the pun, but as like a kind of fun moment, I had mentioned earlier the pre-recorded videos that I did for my presentation for Forum on Education Abroad. And like I had said before, I needed the 3-hour event with the 30-minute break. And I thought to myself, when I was doing the pre-recorded video, it gave me a wrong answer. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this would be so embarrassing if I had to actually present on this slide. But then I kept it, Zach. And I kind of laughed to myself. And I thought to myself, I think it's good for people who even know how this information is used to see that it's not foolproof and that mistakes can happen. And that's okay, because ultimately, when we're putting information into ChatGPT, we have to coach it up a bit. I look at us as ChatGPT being more of the player and us being the coach. And sometimes the players, when they're on the field, they're not going to do what you tell them to do. And so then you got to make the adjustments and just be patient with it and kind of sit back and let it run its course. And know, well, are we generally getting what we want out of the information that has been shared? I think that's really important. I think we can all kind of laugh at, because I think some people expect it when they go on a ChatGPT at first, that it's going to be all seeing, all understanding, all knowing, and perfect right out of the gate. And it was made by humans. We are not perfect. So how are we going to create an infallible and destructive system when it's built by people?
I just have one more question for you today as we begin to wrap up here. As you think about education abroad in 2024, what makes you hopeful?
So maybe this is cliche for our friends in the field here, but the students who are preparing to go abroad and even our study abroad alumni, they fire me up. I want to give a quick shout out to our three graduating global ambassadors, Isabella, Aoife, and Sarah. Each of them has brought something very special and unique to the table. Isabella has been involved with SGA. She highlighted during when she would do her informational sessions how she volunteered with American University of Rome. And something that I find very important and notable as a part of her experience, Aoife's going and plans to be an educator and really brought this teacher mentality into these informational sessions. And she even infused some of her experiences in prop into her capstone, which I thought was beautiful. Sarah, last but not least, she has been one of our longest tenured global ambassadors. And for three semesters, any kind of event we've run, she's done it. She's tabled for us. She has done, you name it, everything. And so they're at the forefront of our conversations. So we have to be the ones that are fanning those flames and allowing those students to really build and help us continue to build on internationalization across the campus. And last but not least, the students who are looking to go abroad, when 2020 hit, I'm seeing a lot of birthdays that are around 2004 right now. A lot of those students were, at least in the United States, would be getting their license around 16 years old when the world is shutting down. And for me, getting my license was another form of freedom and exploration, and to not be able to do that. And now these students right now, they're considering going abroad at a time when on the back half of their high school careers and in the heart of it was so shaken. And they're coming in so fired up and wanting to continue to build upon this experience. So there are champions on campus, and I feel like I can speak for a lot of us across our campuses, across the United States, around the globe, that it's these students that volunteer their time and expertise to be able to fan the flames and support the rest of the student body as they consider study abroad as an option.
Well, I can't imagine a better place to end things than right here. Joseph Maringolo, what a joyful and hilarious and amazing conversation. Thank you for being here, my friend.
Thank you for having me, Zach. Thank you so much to the World Strides team again, for all the editors and people that put their time into curating the questions and working with you and editing this. Absolutely fantastic. Huge shout out to you all who are helping us create bookmarks and in this interesting time frame for us to be able to eventually look back on this and see the fruits of our labors and everything that we're talking about and doing in our field.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of Changing Lives Through Education Abroad. I'm your host, Zach McGinnis, and please make sure to join us next week as we continue to explore topics around international education and exchange. Thank you to my spectacular World Strides colleagues, Lindsay Kelchner and Sarah Kachuba, without whom this podcast would not be possible. Please subscribe to Changing Lives Through Education Abroad on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And share with your friends and colleagues. Let's create life-changing moments together.